Hey, movie lovers, we just wanted to say a few words about today's episode before you listen to it. First, we recorded this episode on June 20th, 2020, in light of the recent examples of police brutality and continued killings of black people without resolution. We want to say unequivocally, black lives matter. However, we are two white voices, so we wanted to amplify a black voice and call our listeners' attention to the Juneteenth holiday. Juneteenth is the first known holiday celebrating the end of slavery in the U.S. It commemorates a day where word of emancipation reached Galveston, Texas, almost a full 2 years after the proclamation from President Lincoln. As I understand it, Juneteenth is also celebrated with personal growth and education, along with actions towards the full abolishment of all racism. In that spirit, we hope our loving differences conversation helps, but we encourage you, movie lovers, to seek other sources. We include some links for websites and articles in our show notes. For those like me who prefer a more cinematic medium, I can also recommend Ava DuVernay's excellent documentary 13th on Netflix, or HBO's Watchmen series for a sci-fi look at real-world racism. Please know that the rest of this episode is not nearly as preachy. The conversation is a little bit more light and general about differences and our friends' experiences as a black individual. Finally, you should also know that this is recorded via video conference, so please forgive any differences in the audio quality. On top of everything else going on, we are still, after all, in a global pandemic. Stay safe, keep hope, we love you. With Danny and Nick.
Da, da, da.
Like, the swag alone was well worth that price.
Yeah, it was like $100 worth of swag.
Yeah, I think we only paid $30 for those tickets, so it was worth it. It was fine.
Yeah, it was totally fine.
I would go to one of those again, but
yeah,
maybe. You know, they have them.
Post-COVID.
I was just going to say, when things are back to normal.
Yeah, because I couldn't imagine doing that with a mask on. No, thank you.
Definitely not.
Definitely not. Well, with that, I figure we might as well introduce everything. Hello, movie lovers. You are, those of you who know us, you're welcome back to the In Love with Movies podcast. My name is Nick, and my co-host is...
Hey, I'm Danny.
We are a podcast of a young married couple who discuss what it is to sort of experience love in the modern world, as well as go through a journey together where we share the movies that we love from our past and talk about why we love them and how they shaped us. And today we are very excited and grateful to be joined by a very close friend of ours. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Sarah. Hello.
Hello, Sarah.
with an H.
With an H. Yes, actually very important.
It is. Yeah.
And I like to think that Sarah was kind of the one that introduced me and Nick.
I was.
Because Sarah's like, she is the social queen. So she knew everybody and she knew me and she knew Nick. And then she was like, hey, look, you guys can talk. And then we fell in love, you know.
Technically, you approached me about it first. I just confirmed. Good choice.
That's true, and I trust your judgment. And then Sarah actually spoke at our wedding, so it was very great. So Sarah, we're not blowing this up. She really is a good friend of ours.
Yeah.
But we brought her on today because Sarah, along with being a close friend, happens to have just like a unique background. And since it is June and there's a lot of stuff happening in the world, we want to just like amplify voices that aren't our own. So Sarah, do you just want to give a little background on yourself and you and what you like and your story? I don't know.
My story.
Tell us about your
story.
Give us your whole life story. By the way, this segment is only 20 minutes.
Okay, my entire life story. Okay, so I am biracial. My dad is black. My mom is Polish American. So that's a unique situation to be in with everything that's going on right now. What else? I work in education. I work in diversity and inclusion. So that's also a very interesting place to be right now at an institution that is very much trying to make significant strides in their contributions to diversity and inclusion. So it's nice to be a part of that. What else would you like to know? There's a lot.
Well, I would ask, I guess, starting with like what's going on right now, like how are things at work since you do work in literally the diversity office? Like your job is to make sure that like things remain diverse. What's the response? What's happening right now?
It's been a bit intense. We've had a lot of students, a lot of faculty kind of asking for statements to be made, and administration being very cautious about making those statements and making sure that they do them correctly as you can, because I don't think that there is a perfect answer to it, but basically enough to be able to show support. We've been doing a lot of diversity trainings with different departments and essentially just helping them have conversations. I think that's kind of where everything has to start. It's basically just making sure people are talking to one another and expressing how they feel about everything that's going on. So that's where the focus is right now for us. Doing any training that we possibly can, training people on actually listening to one another and hearing one another. Essentially having people kind of express how they're feeling, have another person repeat, paraphrase what person A is saying, so that without bias, without implying, what we might think the person is feeling behind that statement. And then having another person kind of, write that down, and then check back with person B to see if person A actually repeated and understood what they were trying to say. So it's a lot of work of being heard and not, not counseling, I guess you could say, not trying to fix someone's problems, but just listen to what they're feeling. Because I think that says a lot, to be able to listen to what someone's actually saying, opposed to trying to interpret for ourselves what that person is saying. Because that's when our bias comes in, and that's when our opinions come in, and that's when our past experiences try to influence another person's feelings, and that's where it kind of gets clouded, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. I actually yesterday just posted on Facebook something from Brené Brown, and she was like, it's not about your idea of someone else's experiences. It's about what their experience is. She said it better, obviously, because she's Brené Brown. but exactly what you're talking about is like, especially like as a white person, not saying, listening to someone and then what I think of or what I think their experience should be, putting it on them is just so important.
Yeah.
And I think it's pretty natural for us to try to put it in our own frame of reference. Because like, even as you were talking, I was catching myself thinking about things about like listening and wanting to relate it to me, and even stuff Danielle and I've been to work on, as I think most married couples are always trying to work on, is like making sure you're actually listening to the person. And then you said the key piece, like not trying to fix it, just hearing and allowing for their experience to be their experience that they're communicating to you.
Because nobody understands their experience like they do. And you're not going to understand their experience if you're constantly, you can empathize. I mean, that's not to take empathy out of anything. It's so that you can see their perspective without, I mean, obviously we're internally, we are relating it to our own experiences to help us with that understanding. But when repeating it back to someone, we want to make sure that we're repeating back what they say so they know that they are heard.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. That's awesome.
And I think being open to that, sorry, go ahead, babe.
I was just gonna say, it's hard. It's not an easy thing to do, right, Nick? Listening is not always easy. and I love what you said about like, not just listening, but like hearing. There's a difference between just like listening to what someone's saying and then actually just like acknowledging it and hearing it and taking it in. And their experience. And I don't know, Nick, if you had something else to say, but I was gonna segue into Sarah just like sharing her experience, maybe just growing up biracial.
Yeah, that's actually literally what my, we can move on to that. That was my first actual like question for Sarah to talk about for us. So like, what was it like for you having one black parent and one, white parent?
I don't think I fully understood how biracial I was until other people started pointing it out to me. Because my family never did that. Like, I knew that they were black. I knew that my mom was Polish and white. And people always, and I should add to that as well, I say that my mother is Polish because she came from Poland.
She's very Polish.
She's Polish American, and my dad is Black American. He was born in the United States. So that's why I'm not, you know, discounting where my dad is from, because I've, you know, I have to disclose that, because often I get comments about, like, you always kind of hype your Polish side, and it's like, well, because that's not the side that people see. They see that I'm Black before they see that I'm Polish. So I make sure to give light to both of my ancestry.
Yeah, and for you listeners right here, y'all should be jealous, because Sarah, what is it, 3 years now in a row, she's had a pierogi party.
Well, I think it's at least four or five that I've been going to.
Yeah,
so.
It's four, and it's not going to happen this year, which I'm upset about, but...
We'll have virtual pierogies, but
yeah,
I
might
would
send
like
stuff to people's houses.
sauerkraut.
Completely on board with that idea.
Yeah, or like you guys could just stop by and I'll just fill your plates and be like, okay, now you have to go.
Oh my gosh, that would be amazing. But we'd like to thank your mother for that, and definitely, and that's one thing. When I first met you, I didn't know the Polish side. Obviously, you see like people obviously just see what's in front of them before they get to know a person. But I'm so happy that you've decided to embrace, like, yeah, I'm also real Polish, and let me share some of my awesome food wisdom with you, which I'm so grateful for.
Yeah. So it's important for me to celebrate both sides of my family. And I totally just lost my train of thought.
I'll go on to another question then, if that's okay.
Yeah, totally.
So you kind of already alluded to it, but like one of the questions I was wondering, because I've been hearing... In fact, I was just watching John Boyega, who plays Finn in Star Wars. For those of you movie lover listeners who know that we're big fans of Star Wars, he had a very impassioned speech at a Black Lives Matter rally in London. And one of the things he talked about was like being intimately aware, and every Black person has a memory of like when they became aware of their Blackness. And so I was wondering if you have a vivid memory for that. And as it sounds like maybe a vivid memory for Blackness, a vivid memory for, oh, I'm not Black, I'm actually... biracial, or however you would word that. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Sure. Yeah. So I am Black, and I say that I'm Black probably more so than I say that I'm biracial, but I, you know, I think the first instance that I had with that was when I was in grade school, and I had just transferred to another school. And people asked me what I was. And I was confused by that question, because I was like, well, I'm human. I don't really understand what that question is. And they're like, no, but like, they're like, I'm Mexican, she's Filipino, what are you? And I was like, oh, my dad's Black and my mom's white. And they're like, oh, you're a zebra. And I was like, well, no. not a zebra, because I don't have stripes. It doesn't work that way.
Sorry, for listeners, we're on a Zoom call, and Danielle and I's mouths both just dropped at the word zebra, just in case you're listening and that happened to you. So please, yes, continue your story, Sarah.
Yeah, so it's just, it was just one of those things where you're just like, oh, I guess I am something, you know what I mean? Like, and it wasn't that I wasn't proud of who I was, or didn't know who I was or where I came from, but it was very apparent to me that I had to outside people start identifying who I was. Then slowly started to notice like more and more. And it was actually when I moved here, it was when I moved to Illinois, because I had grown up for the most part in San Francisco. There's a lot of cultural diversity, and not saying that there isn't cultural diversity in Illinois, but there was, and in Chicago specifically, that here I had to define who I was, but there I didn't necessarily have to, because everybody was kind of everything.
Sure.
So, and yeah, and that, nobody really talked about ethnicity so much that I remember. It could have been that it conversations had happened. I just don't remember them. I just remember the first time I came here and had to identify myself racially or ethnically.
Yeah. Do you feel like you've ever been like forced to choose? Is that a weird question?
No, it's not. Well, because I get that I talk white. When I was younger, I got that. They're like, but you talk white, so your mom is obviously white. And I was like, well, she's Polish. Doesn't have an accent so much, but yeah, so I was always confused by what that meant, because my dad would then talk white too then. Because I'm like, my dad talks like this. So I don't know what not talking white sounds like or is. So that was always confusing to me. So I don't know if that was, you know, so it was always just weird to me to on one side not be, to not feel like I was black enough, but then I know that I was definitely not white. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I've always kind of like, and I'm only speaking from my experience. I'm not speaking by any means for all biracial people and for like all, yeah, and no, I can't. I can only speak from my experience. So that was my experience where I was, there were times where I felt that I wasn't black enough and then I didn't necessarily obviously fit because I wasn't, I'm not white.
I think the, for me at least, the otherness is eye-opening. I don't know about you, Danielle, but I think our listeners can probably relate to the idea if they happen to be white people like us. I don't ever remember a moment in my life where there was this salient, the color,
I'm white,
or I am this, yeah, thing, I am white, you know, and that to me goes to show that whole systemic racism, the idea of like you as a grade schooler had a moment where you can remember like being made to be aware of your otherness. And that to me is like, but the reason it's systemic or the reason it favors white people is you have like, oh, the whiteness is the one that's not other. The whiteness is just is, and everything else is other. So
yeah,
putting it in perspective to some listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. Sarah, I don't know if you remember 5 years ago or so, we were at a leadership summit and you shared a story about a tan M&M.
I did.
Would you be willing to share that story again?
Sure. Yeah. So back in the day, there was a tan M&M. And I remember opening up the package and like, as I was eating them, being like, this M&M looks like me. Like I, you know what I mean? Like there were a few things that like, that I saw that other than my siblings, and a few other kids that were biracial, that had like the same colored skin as me. And so there were definitely things that I guess attached myself to. And one of them was the tan M&M. And then there was this campaign to change the tan M&M to the now blue M&M. I was a little bit heartbroken and I was upset because I was like, they're trying, why are they taking the tan one out? I don't understand. I got really upset. And I don't even think I ever really talked to like my family about it or anything like that. And then, it seems so ridiculous to be attached to a tan M&M, but it was something that I identified with and I was very upset. And then I realized, I was like, okay, this is, you know, it's just an M&M. And so then I was like, well, what if they, you know, they changed it to blue. And so I decided that blue from then on was going to be my favorite color because it was still the tan M&M like underneath. Like it was this, you know what I mean? Like it was like, this was what the tan M&M was. And therefore blue is now my favorite color because I'm still there. And these are like things that I had, conversations that I had like on my own. I don't think I ever really shared them with my parents. And I'm sure they'd probably be like, okay, well, we probably should have talked about that if you were upset about that. But I did journal a lot as a kid, so.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And for our listeners, just a heads up, Sarah is currently sitting in front of a giant blue picture.
Yeah, my painting. Yeah.
So she's not lying. She loves blue.
I do love blue. I do love blue.
I love that. I also think I don't know. Again, I always want to just put it in my own frame of reference. And I think a lot of our listeners, and this is an opportunity to educate, that story to me just communicates so clearly the desperation of the quote people, and I put that in quotations marks not because they're not genuinely othered but because it's stupid that they are, to find something that they can relate to in like larger pop culture, find representations of themselves in the things that they love. And I think that movies and television, we're big fans of those things happen to be starved for issues around that. I'm starting this new initiative for IO Movie Night because it's combining my passions of IO psychology with movies, obviously. And I went to go try to find some movie about like discrimination upon race in culture and racism. And like, there's like almost no movies. And the ones that do exist for racism specifically are not about the workplace, but instead are period pieces about around 1860s for slavery or around the 1960s for the civil rights movement. And I think that it's because part of what we're talking about here is like, there's this painted picture through Hollywood that's something of the past. Like it is this thing that happened and we got over it in the 1960s and now it's done. And it's just like, no, it is still a thing that happens actively in every workplace. I don't know if you have any examples that you're willing to share, Sarah, but I was wondering, can you think of any pressing examples in the workplace specifically where you can remember feeling very clearly discriminated against if you're willing to share those pieces? And if the answer is no, that is perfectly fine, obviously, too.
Very clearly discriminated against in the workplace. I think it would be any time that my opinion was not enough, even though, or not necessarily opinion or opinion, but like my answer to a question that someone was asking wasn't enough. Like they had to go to somebody else to confirm that answer. And they were like, but Sarah just told you what it was. So I've had moments of, and that, but I could also put that off at, I could attribute that to being a woman as well. Because a lot of times it has been a male counterpart that has questioned something that I've said. But so I don't know if it's necessarily attributed to my ethnicity, my race versus my gender. Because I'm lucky to have both. So it's an everyday thing.
You could be like our mayor and also be, you know, queer identifying, and then you'd have the trifecta.
Yeah, the trifecta, absolutely. Yeah, thank God that we have Lightfoot. But yeah, so okay. Those are, I can't remember anything really specifically, but I there are moments in the past where that has happened, where it's been something I've said or being questioned or, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Danielle, did you have any other things you wanted to discuss?
Well, I was just going to say, Sarah, for all of our white, cis, straight, gender, all the, you know, all of our listeners out there who aren't of color or who don't have, like, just maybe didn't grow up diverse, with diverse backgrounds, like, what do you want to say? Do you have, like, any advice? Especially in this time, because we know that, like, I think you were saying it earlier, there's just so many different things going around. So some people don't know if there's a right thing to say, or if you're saying something wrong, or you should say something, or you shouldn't say something. What advice do you have for people who like support the movement? How do we do that?
Yeah, for people that, for those that are supporting the movement, and I say this with absolute love, but we are, it's exhausting to constantly try to make it okay for people.
Yeah.
Like you're uncomfortable right now. And I think that's fine. Do you know what I mean? Like you're questioning things. People are questioning things. And I think that's absolutely okay. Oh, it's absolutely okay because you should be. My advice would be to do more is to listen. I mean, you know, a lot of stuff has been said about listening and we've talked about it. I would definitely listen. I would definitely educate yourself. But also, I think, don't be afraid to say something. You need to be cautious about what you say and kind of how you say it. But I don't think there is a perfect way to, there isn't a perfect way to respond to this. Especially if you're trying to reach out to someone that you know. And trying to make sure that they're okay and just letting them know that you support them. I think that's fine. And I think that's good. And I think that's wonderful. But don't necessarily always ask them what you should do.
Yeah.
You can figure out what you need to do. So listen with your heart, speak from your heart, support, but don't, don't expect your minority friend to be able to give you those answers, I guess. Yeah.
I have the one quick segment that we need to get to before we move on to our movie, where we've been talking about the classic romantic comedy Moonstruck. But the segment that we have here is Closer Through Science. Danielle, what's Closer Through Science?
Yeah, it's where you get closer through some science. So we're going to ask you, Nick, because you know Nick's a nerd and he likes like articles and stuff. He found this article that talks about like 50 questions that you should ask someone to get closer to them. And so every month we just ask each other these questions. And so today, Sarah, we're going to ask you a question, if you're okay.
Okay, I'm fine.
So we can get even closer to you.
Get a little closer.
Yeah, it's you always find and learn interesting things from each other. So I'm going to preface this given the way it is. I think it's kind of interesting how it turned out this way. You can put it in the frame of the conversation we're having now, Sarah, or more broadly, which is how it was originally intended. But the question is, for what in your life do you feel the most grateful?
Good question.
I think my family, honestly. They keep me grounded. They remind me every day that the world is an amazing place and can be a very amazing place. And that there are people who care and there are people that want to make a difference, and that, things are difficult and hard at times, but inevitably there is some good that comes out of that. 'Cause I mean, when I started using the expression, like, we need, you know, beautiful things grow out of shit, right? Like, we use manure to, we use manure to, like, you know, grow our food and to sustain us and to, we use it on flowers, right? I mean, so it's like, there are some beautiful things that can grow from shit. And right now we are in the shit. And yeah. I think, My hope is that we do not go backward and that we continue to move forward, and that the media will also show the peaceful, wonderful protests that are going on and not just the riots. So just threw that little bit in there.
That was perfect.
I think that's perfect. Yeah.
Let's end on that one.
All right. Thank you very much, listeners. We will break real quickly here for a word from us sponsoring our sponsors. And then we will hear about Moonstruck on the other side.
In love with movies. Da da da. In love with movies. Da da da. And we're back. Thank you all for bearing with us through those sponsored advertisements. and now we're getting to our movies portion of the podcast, which we hope is going to be a fun one, because this is actually, Sarah, a movie that Sarah picked our movie. It's Moonstruck, 1987, the year that Nicolas was born, with Cher and Nicolas Cage. And both, neither Nick or I have seen it before. I've seen snippets of it because it's one of my mom's favorite movies, but I did not expect what I saw.
Agreed. I wanted to first start off with thank you, Sarah, because this is something that's like on like movie buffs lists, and especially like romantic comedies. It's just sort of like a known thing. I know it kind of helped make both Nicolas Cage and Cher's careers, and I had never seen it. So it was like, you made me,
it didn't make Cher's career. Her voice made her career.
Yeah.
Okay, her acting.
Her acting career.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. And that is an important distinction. You're absolutely right. She was very well known well before.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd never seen it, and so I was very grateful to have an opportunity to do so. So,
and it's rare that Nick has not seen a movie, honestly.
Especially one that's, you know, kind of very intense. I knew about the whole like Moonstruck, and I knew what it was called, but one of my first early notes was like, man, they're really leaning heavy into the whole Italy thing, the Italian thing.
Very much so. The Italian American.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So Sarah, do you want to talk about why, sorry, Nick, I definitely cut you off, but.
Hey, I do it to you literally all the time, like I just did, but hey, I think you're about to
stop
ask
talking.
For
okay,
story.
Sarah,
why
did you pick this movie? Why? Tell us your love story about Moonstruck.
Love story, it is actually one of my mom's favorite movies too. So one, you know, I was like 7 when this came out, so obviously I wasn't watching it when it came out, but It was one that she's like, this movie is so great. And because it has, it features the opera La Boheme, and that's one of my mom's favorite Puccini operas. And so I just have fond memories of sitting and watching it with her. But I love this movie mainly because it is, there's so much warmth in it. There's so much, and like watching it as an adult, I think, because I watched it when I was in like high school and all of that, but watching it as someone who's been through relationships, I appreciate the various points of view in relationships and how relationships work and how you have to work on them. And I think more so Cher's character, how she has to kind of come to terms with herself in relationships and how she sees herself. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I feel like I've had to do in like my 30s. Now 40.
I agree. I think that I wrote down somewhere over here, like, this just shows all the different sides of relationships, and I'm sure we're going to get into it in a little bit, but there's just like different kinds of marriages, and sometimes they don't work, and like even the fact that it's about Cher agreeing to marry this guy, and her mom says, do you love him? And she said, no. And then the mom says, good. I mean, that was just, didn't I like screech, Nick? I was like, what? But it just goes to show, you're right there, like the different kinds of why people get into marriages and why people get into relationships. Not always for love.
And spoilers for anyone later. I'm curious then what you guys think, because, and again, spoiler for anybody who hasn't seen this movie.
It's been out since 1987, so that's your problem.
But just like know that we're going to talk about everything all the way through. Like, I'm curious what you guys think, if that is an indicator, because when I read that and she says something like, the mom says, you know, good, don't love him because otherwise, like, it makes it difficult or whatever. They know that they can use that against you, basically, and kind of like gives a look to her husband. And to me, that was an indication that she loved her husband and that, like, it made things difficult for her. But obviously, later on, we find out the husband is cheating. And then when she, like, says, you know, stop, and he just, like, takes a moment, he's like, gets angry at first and then goes, okay. And like, I'm curious, do you guys think she was saying that she did love her husband, or do you think that they had a marriage that was less based on love and more based on, you know, the necessities or the comforts or what have you?
I think it was definitely love. But I think it was a love that you take for granted. In the sense that, cause she says to her, if you love them, they drive you crazy. So it's not that she's like, she feels like they take advantage necessarily. But I think there's a tendency of like, they drive you crazy because there are going to be those moments where you don't feel seen. There are going to be moments where you have to really fight for it. Or there are going to be those moments, like he says, after she tells him to stop, he's like, my life is built on lies. And she's like, no, it's not. Like, you have a really good life. And he kind of is like, I know. He's like, but he was going through something himself, which made him, you know, I guess stray and possibly fear death. As as she says, like, why do men cheat? Because they fear death.
That was hilarious.
But I think I think it's just that there is a lot of love there, because you can't, like, I think it would be very difficult to live in a house like that and support one another's family and be so close to the family if you didn't have that love for them.
Yeah. So let's backtrack it. For those of you who haven't seen it, just like setting up a premise, because I had no idea, like you hear the title Moonstruck. I don't know why I pictured like people skipping through the streets singing or something. I don't know why. But basically it's about.
Because when the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie.
Turn down your audio, everyone. So it's about New York, Brooklyn. In the 80s, very, very Italian, very like, you know, this big family, big Italian family. Cher plays the daughter, and she gets proposed to by this guy, Johnny, who she doesn't love, like we've already said. But she's like, this is what I have to do, because she believes her first marriage was cursed. Her husband died, got hit by a bus. And so she thinks that because she did the wedding the wrong way, it's bad luck. So she wants to do it the right way, even though it's not the right guy. But his mother is dying in Sicily. So he has to go back to take care of his mom real quick.
And he says, I need you to do one thing for me. You have to invite my brother to our wedding. I haven't talked to him in 5 years, but I need you to reach out to him. Spoiler alert, Nicolas Cage is her brother. And he's this wild man who lost his hand because of Johnny. His name is Ronnie.
That's not so far out of a stretch there.
What terrible parents did that?
And I couldn't even tell you any of their last names because they're all like, you know, like very Italian. No.
I think it's like Caparici or something like
Capuchin,
that.
Yeah.
Camerari.
There you go.
There it is. Yeah. Yep. And so Cher goes to meet this guy and convince him to come to her wedding instead, ends up madly falling in, like, and I say mad, like madly falling in love with him because it's just wild. They're like their whole beginnings.
It also does not make any sense for me as a watcher personally. How you guys felt about that scene?
Sarah, I want to hear.
I think it makes sense because there's, so that was the, if you see kind of how Cher is going about her life throughout the, I'm sorry, Loretta. Cher as Loretta Castorini. As she's kind of going through, she's, you know, she's got her, she does the books for people at various businesses in the neighborhood. And she, you know, she checks in with her parents. She checks in with her aunt and uncle. She checks in with another like neighborhood thing. So she kind of goes throughout her life just very, it's predictable. Like she knows what she's going to do. There's a routine. She knows what she's going to do day in, day out. Johnny is very routine, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's a stand-up guy. Why not marry him? He's stable. He's a good Italian boy. He loves his mother. It's great. It checks all those boxes. But then she meets this Ronnie guy who has like sworn off love, who is all because his brother made him look the other way and he got his hand cut off and his fiance left him. And so now he's without love. And Ronnie's like, you ruined my life and I'm upset and the world sucks. And she's kind of a no-nonsense person where she's just like, that's not his fault. And he's like, what are you talking about? You know, I don't understand how this is not, you know, his fault. But I think in that, she's never had a heated exchange with anyone who has essentially felt the way that she's felt about love. Because she essentially gave up when her husband died. And she's like, I just have bad luck. So instead of like trying to find someone that I actually feel a connection to, I'm just going to keep going on as business as usual. But then when they go back to his apartment and she's like cooking for them, because they also show her as someone who's like, I'm going to take care of all these people. Mm-hmm. She's constantly telling Johnny, wear a hat. You know, don't eat that. It's oily fish. You're not going to digest that well. She's always taking care of people, but she's never really taking care of herself. And so she starts taking care of Ronnie, Johnny's brother. And she's telling him what to do. And he's like, wait, there's somebody who actually cares about, you know, this food being good for my blood or whatever. And then they like get into it, but it's like a passionate debate. And she's just like, I haven't felt like this. Like no one's made me feel like this before or in a while. Right. And so I think it's like igniting passion in between the two of them where they kind of, and he says, and Nicolas Cage says it, I thought I was dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then she comes into his life and she kind of
awakens is lightly, because he physically, the first time they like go to kiss, which they've had like a 4.5 minute conversation before that, he throws a table across the room and then just attacks her.
He stands her up, he stood her up gently, he respectfully stood her up.
This is the thing that like, I guess I get that. I'm glad you're here to explain it to us. Cause to me, it's like, I don't know, for anybody who's lost faith in the Phantom Menace in Star Wars, go watch Dave Filoni in talking about it in The Mandalorian. But you just gave me that same Dave Filoni conversation for this movie. Cause I literally was like, I saw what they were trying to do, but I didn't feel it. And then you're discussing it kind of like, okay, I kind of get into it. But like my logical brain, there's still a small part of me that's saying the same thing Danielle is. It's like, they've had a 4 minute conversation.
Right.
And now she's willing to just throw everything out the window. Only because like, and the guy's scary. Like the first time they show him and they don't show his face and that phone conversation where she calls him up and he's like, basically, you know, fuck my brother and fuck you for talking to me about him. And then like, slams the phone down. He looks like frightened.
He's in a very dark place. Like, that's, you know, they're being, it's a very over the top and very dramatic, like overly dramatic type of like movie. Like, sure. It's so extra, but I think that's why I love it, because it's so extra. It's kind of like, it's the stuff that you like feel inside, but you don't necessarily let come out. Like, there are moments where you're just like, oh, I would totally attack that person right now. Like, not in a bad way, but like, I would make out with you. Maybe that's just me. But like, but I don't know. There are those moments that we like feel inside where like, it does seem kind of like overly dramatic, and there's so much passion in it. And I think it was just, it adds to that comedic aspect of the movie too, because you're just like, yeah, you guys just met and all of a sudden this is like the love of your life. But sometimes it happens like that. Like, and I think that, again, going back to what he said, I was dead. Like, he shut himself off, but then so did she, you know? She resigned herself to a life where it was just like, it's okay. I'll just marry someone because it's convenient. But not
so she can move out of the house. Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
I do think that gives me a number of thoughts, if I may. One of them is, yes, and I think you framing it as like that, it's done intentionally. Like, and I think it just is part of the reason I didn't connect with it as much the first time was maybe that brand of comedy and that type of choice for comedy was not something I'm used to, is not something I choose to watch. But like in that frame, and even like with the age, you can, yeah, I absolutely do see it. And the one thing I did, I remember writing down somewhere like where I was like, clearly this is meant to kind of be played for comedic effect. And the place where it really hit home for me was in that final scene that I want to say for us, but the final scene of the kitchen when like everybody ends up coming into the same place and like just the antics that take place. But the other thing that you just reminded me of, Sarah, is like, it really is some of those feelings. And I think we have those feelings in other places, but not to like, speaking of the first time that we met and the fact that you were there when we first met Danielle and I, Danielle and I have talked about on the podcast and like the whole like sparks and the energy and like that, you know, we didn't, you know, sort of throw caution to the wind and do ridiculous things in front of all of our friends. But both of us talked about kind of feeling that when we first met each other. And I think, yeah, you're right. And I don't want to speak for Danielle, but I know that in many ways I had more or less resigned myself to like, there's going to be no meaningful passion in my life. I can have, you know, some experiences or meet some people here, but the sort of companionship or the real tight love is coming from friends, and I wasn't expecting that to be from my romantic relationships anymore. And things changed.
So you're saying I'm Cher?
Do you believe in a love after love?
Yes. I love, Sarah, that you said that this movie is extra. I just wrote down like, I just love everything in all the scenes though. Like, Italian New York, I felt like I was transported to a different place. There's not a lot of movies that make me feel like I'm somewhere else. And I was like, I'm here. In the 80s, I'm in Italian Brooklyn right now with the deli and the grandpa.
I love the grandpa.
And all his dogs that he just walks.
Yeah. In the random scene where he's speaking like broken English/Italian with his friends at someone's
cemetery,
yeah, because you know, like he has his routine where he walks and his friends and they go visit graves, and
I loved the grandpa.
He's great,
such a funny character. And then he tells all the dogs, he's like, look at the moon, howl at the moon, and then he starts howling. And by the way, none of that was actually spoken in English, but you completely understand what he's saying to his dogs. I just love that you're like, oh, he's telling them to howl.
La Bella Luna, my favorite. Because the moon is also another character in the film. Like, it is, you know, the moon, that moon is what brings women to men. I think that's what...
That's what I wrote down too,
What Raymond said, his brother-in-law, Cosmo's brother-in-law, was just like, the moon brings the woman to the man. And that's like... It's beautiful to think of a full moon like that and how it can bring romance and people can be, you know, taken by it. So I think that was cool and how it all, and then like how Raymond and like Rita, when she was like, he turns around, he's like, that's Cosmo's moon. And then she's like, you look like you're 25. And like that moment, I was like, oh my God, I love them.
I felt that too. I was like, that's just such a sweet little moment that like, that's what makes the movie seem real, even though it's like over the top and extra, is those relationships of like,
just these old aunts and uncles saying like, hey, you look young. And he's like, oh, I'll show you young. And then he's so happy the next day because he like finally got laid, you know?
Yeah.
It's running great. Around skipping. But yeah, I thought that was very, very cute.
Then you and can still have passion.
I will say, yeah, and I recognize the moon being kind of like the symbol for passion, that like as it's kind of like almost seems to legitimately, literally have magical powers, because yeah. You've got the, you know, the brother-in-law saying like, I saw this moon when you first like were interested in my sister, so clearly there's the passion of that there. The moon is happening while we have the mother meeting with the random NYU professor, and there's sort of like some love happening there. It's obviously happening while Cher's character Loretta is, you know, having her detente with Nicolas Cage's character. But yeah, I thought that was kind of cool that you like, they show you that like that moon is this thing throughout. And that was the one thing that like, I didn't know if I like identified with the sort of poeticness of it. But one thing I wrote down like about the scene that I just did not get of like her right before they kiss, she's going on and on and on and on about the wolf. And like, to me, the wolf, like it was this forced metaphor that I didn't quite get, but like I'm getting, thinking on it now, it's like, oh, it's because he's the wolf howling at the moon. That's why you show the grandfather with the dogs howling at the moon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But there was also the moment in the convenience store mm-hmm. where the woman says to the hum, and she's like, the way you look at that woman, it's a wolf, you're a wolf. And then he goes, and then immediately is just like, you know what I see? The woman I married. And it's like this sweet little moment. And so I think she takes that metaphor and she uses it on him, because she's like, you are the wolf because you're so angry. She's like, but his version of that story is that he, which is kind of over the top too, the fact that he was so not wanting to be married to this woman, to this fiance, that he chewed off his own hand, you know, and wants to blame Johnny for it, but really he did something so that he wouldn't have to, so he would repulse this woman and she wouldn't want to marry him anyway, so that he could be alone because he didn't want to be married. So it's like she took something she heard and kind of like tried to attach it to his situation.
Sure.
Which I don't think was, I don't know that was completely accurate, but I think she was essentially calling him out for what she did with her, with Johnny. Like, she's marrying someone just cause, and he, she said that he was trying to, you know, injure himself so that he wouldn't have to go through with a marriage that he didn't want to. So I guess trying to find like common ground, but she really being kind of, not passive, but she's, what's the word I'm looking for?
Vague mm-hmm. or stretching the metaphor or...
Projecting. She's projecting her situation onto him.
Yes, somehow I didn't even make that connection. Now that you mentioned it, I didn't make the connection while we're watching it. I'm going to give myself the excuse
like
I was watching it really late and I was tired.
I've watched this movie like 30 times. But this time I actually took notes on it. So it's just like, well, if I'm going to be talking about this movie, I want to like pay particular attention to certain things. But like, yeah.
I'm
glad that you're here to like, I didn't get that whole projecting thing. I guess it was a little lost on me too. Like Nikki said, just trying to understand the metaphor. Cause then he calls her a headless bride. And I was like, what is happening right now?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I do love the fact that like we picked this movie because we were talking to Sarah about loving people different than you. But actually, Sarah, what you were just pointing out is these two people are actually so similar.
Yeah.
But they're both ignoring the fact that they have these feelings and these passions. And the moon wakes it up in them, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that they're different in the way that they handle things. Like, he's more volatile, but she just resigns herself to it. She's like, this is how it's going to be. It's fine. I'll move on. Life goes on. It'll be okay. But he's all like, no, I want the world to suffer because I'm suffering, you know, like he wants to bring everyone into his pain, where she's just like,
yeah,
there are other people around me that I can take care of. And my pain is not necessary or not important. So she doesn't reckon, like, for me, I don't feel like she really kind of looks at herself in any other way other than, someone who takes care of everybody else but doesn't take care of herself. Which is why, like, if we go to the next scene where he's just like, I want, you know, come to the opera with me. If we're gonna part, come to the opera with me. And so in that moment, she then is like, huh, I kind of feel a little bit rejuvenated. I'm gonna, like, maybe I will get my hair done and maybe I will, like, dress up for this. And I think that you could also look at that, like, well, here she is, like, changing for a man. But I think it was, I think women also tend to do renewals after they've been through pain and after they've been through things that are difficult to address. Like, we want to, like, make ourselves feel better. We want to present our best selves forward. And so, like, maybe we'll do something with her hair or whatever.
I actually saw that as her finally feeling good about herself enough to be like, yeah, I can get my hair. Like, I know I'm a catch. I'm Cher. So she's like, she looked beautiful. Like, just so gorgeous. But right backtracking, like, when she wakes up in the morning, she's like, what did I just do? I have to leave.
Yeah.
And he goes, I love you. And she smacks the shit out of him.
Yeah, twice.
Twice. I love that response so much. But that speaks to, like, he literally made her feel something. And you never hear Johnny say, I love you to her. She never says, I love you to him. She just says, make sure you wear your hat.
Yeah, exactly. And I think
it's a good point. I'd never noticed that.
Yeah. And so, like, I thought about you too with your tattoos, like, how, like, yours is, I love you and I know. Like, I think for me and my husband would be like, I love you and snap out of it. Because that's, like, one of my favorite lines. Snap out of it.
That's what I was going to say. The thing that struck me is not even her striking across the face twice, but the fact that she, like, did that to then say, like, snap out of it. Like, how dare you? Like, you're not allowed to love me. Like, just get over that. Like,
yeah, like, no, well, too bad, because now it's real life, and we have to get back to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that, and I love that she, like, gets excited to go to the opera, and then she feels so many things. Like, she's bawling, because it seems like a sad opera.
It is.
All operas are sad. And instead of him, like, getting angry or, like, embarrassed, he just, like, grabs her hand. And that, I think, to me, was the first moment when I was like, oh,
yeah,
he really does love her. Not just because he had sex with her, but because he, like, he's who she really is and is, like, cares about it and is, like, compassionate towards her. So,
and Pacini's La Boheme, I think, is perfect also for this couple, because the fact that they're going to see it on the last day that they're saying that they will ever see each other in this way, because La Boheme is about a poor seamstress and I think a poet, and Mimi and Rodolfo fall in love, but then Mimi is really sick. Rodolfo can't take care of her, and I believe they end up breaking up, but at the very end, like, she basically goes to him and finds him, and then she, like, dies in his arms. Ugh. Like, it's so sad, because they have to, like, say, he's like, I can't take care of her, so I have to let her go. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, and I probably chopped that up, and somebody's gonna be like, that is not what love was about, but, like, I'm pretty sure, like, very, very roughly, that is what it's about. And so that moment, she's crying, even though she, you know, I think it's like she knows that they're saying goodbye. And so that kind of, like, I thought it was a very smart way of using Puccini.
Yeah. I didn't even know what that opera was about. It just, like, looked sad.
Also my mom's favorite.
So we won't even get into the sort of psychology of it. We'll leave it for maybe any therapy that you're going through about it, having it attached to your mom. I will say the one thing I thought was interesting about
Sorry. I was like, what is that?
Anyway, what I was going to say, the connections of, like, the other thing that kind of noticed to me is, like, I thought it was interesting how this movie as a whole opens up the importance of the opera early on. Like, because the very beginning, the first 30 seconds, while the title cards are playing and things like that, you're like, get a scene of the Civic Opera at the Lincoln Center, and then it's like you're following this truck around town that very clearly says, like, Civic Opera something on it. And I legitimately thought, like, oh, we're going to go and she works at the Civic Opera and she's going to be, like, a musician or something like that. And then it's not that at all. In fact, she's never been to the opera before. But, like, that scene or that, like, piece to it, I think, is communicating exactly what you're saying, Sarah, where, like, the filmmakers are trying to direct your attention to the fact that, like, what is happening at the opera is like, so important. And I think that to that end, like, I'm sure they made intentional steps of which opera they're going to see and how that has messages tied into the movie as well in the layers.
Yeah, and then you also see the operas where she sees her dad with another woman, which like really makes her sad. And then you just see Ronnie like supporting her in that too. He's basically like, what do you need? What do you need? I'm gonna take care of you. You're not going home. I'm not letting you go home. And then she eventually comes home, and that's like that last night before shit hits the fan. Because then Johnny comes looking for her and she's not there. And he says, I have to tell her something. I have to tell her something. And the whole time he was like, I have to tell her something, because his mom miraculously was healed.
Yeah.
I was like, it better be that you are not going to marry her because I don't like you.
And sure enough, it was. Because he's a mama's boy and he'd only do what his mom told him to do, which is why
he needs therapy for his mom.
Yeah, there's a little bit of an unhealthy attachment there.
Yeah.
Like, I also think it's very interesting how they juxtapose Ronnie. Like, Johnny is seemingly, like, all of his life is being upended for his concerns that his mother might be dying. Ronnie, on the other hand, is like, oh, that's nice, we're not close. Like,
yeah, he's like, it's fine.
I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah. So then it all culminates in this final scene where we all know that the mom had like a walk with a guy that grandpa saw, and grandpa's like, no, 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 how dare you? But in reality, his son is the one that's actually cheating on the wife, and she just wanted to have like a little fling, I think, and feel it. But I also think that's when she realized, I do love my husband, like this is not something for me. And so then people just keep coming to breakfast, and it's so funny to me. So it's just Loretta and her mom at first, and her mom's like, you have love bites, which I thought was very funny. And then Ronnie comes in after that, and then the dad comes in, and then grandpa comes in, and aunt and uncle come in, and then finally Johnny come in. And it's just this, like you were saying earlier, Nick, like this comedy of errors almost.
Yeah.
It's just everyone figuring out what everyone else has been doing.
Yeah.
I literally was like writing down how I like was not enjoying this movie. And then this scene alone, which of course does not make any sense without the setup from the rest of the movie, like saves it for me personally. Yeah. Like,
Yeah, because everybody addresses it. Because the mom, like Rose, the mom, she tried to experience what her husband was experiencing to see if like, to try and better understand why he was doing what he was doing. And that's, so she has that. And then everybody's kind of connected and put because into the same situation now, because like they're all in this room and everybody knows something about the other person. Mm-hmm. And they're all looking at each other like, are you going to say something? Are you going to say something? Like, what's going to happen? And then it explodes.
But it culminates in Ronnie saying, will you marry me? And she says yes, which is cute. And then the mom asks, do you love him? And she says something like, oh, more than anything.
Yeah. And she's like, and oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's too bad. And then the grandfather crying because he's confused.
Yeah, but somebody asked him,
why
are
you crying? I'm confused. So...
When he said that, I looked at Nick and said, me too.
Yeah, it's just great.
And then he makes his brother take off the ring that he proposed with and then give it to her. One thing I do want to say to men in the 80s, I don't know if this was true, but why the hell aren't you, first of all, if you're going to propose, preparing with a ring and then getting down on your knees?
Because you ruined the suit. He's going to ruin his suit.
Yeah, but the fact that I wrote this down, I was like, when did getting down on one knee become a thing? Because... Yeah. Like, was it not in the 80s?
It could be a cultural thing, right? Like, you don't get down on your knees because it's a, you know.
Nice
the proposal of marriage is very different, I guess. But
sure. I like, but Sarah, that when you were explaining that, you were talking in an Italian accent.
No, was I? Because but, yeah.
Oh, good times.
Yeah, you're going to ruin the suit. But it was great. I love that movie. And I do love how it's like, it does spotlight different aspects of relationships and like the difficulties that you can have in a relationship. But that if you, because like 52 years of marriage between Cosmo and Rose, right? Like that's not something that you're just going to throw away.
Mm-hmm.
But But then also, like, the fact that he was just like, you know, she's like, no more of this, you're done. And he's like, okay. And then he, you know, talks about, like, what he's essentially very, very quickly talks about what he's going through. And then she's like, that's not the case. You know, like, no, your life is not nothing. Kind of like, look at this table that you're sitting at right now, that your life is not for nothing.
Yeah.
And like, it's important to me. I did like when she was listening to when Loretta came home and said, I got engaged, and she asked him if she loved him. And she's like, no. And she's like, okay, that's good. That makes you crazy. And then he goes downstairs and starts listening to the record. And she's like, oh, now he's listening to Vicky Kahn. He's not going to touch me for the rest of the night. There are just so many good, there are so many good lines in that movie.
Definitely. I do like that it ends too with like radical honesty, just because I know that's something Danielle and I've been talking about. So I always frame it in that, like, the idea of like, even the things that are going to hurt your partner, you should still share them. And I think that like, there's almost that element of that's what's partially lacking from Johnny and Loretta's relationship, is like, they're not being honest with each other about all the things that matter to them. And that's why they're not really able to have a deeper relationship, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I just want to talk about, I didn't know any of the other actors, but obviously I know Nicolas Cage and Cher, and I thought their acting was really good. Cher, in the first couple of scenes, I guess I just had to get used to her putting on a Brooklyn accent or Italian accent, whatever it was.
Brooklyn, yeah, it's more Brooklyn than Italian.
And she like kind of talked with her mouth closed, it's a little bit like that. But after a while, I was like, man, she's just such a believable character. And Nicolas Cage, when I first saw him, I was like, oh, he just looks weird and skinny and small. But I thought he did a really great job too of just being like manic, but also madly in love.
Yeah. Well, the teacher was Frasier's dad. I don't know if you guys put that together. That's why I also like watching old movies, because you're like, wait.
That guy.
I thought he was much better looking than her husband, but whatever. 52 years of marriage.
52 years of marriage.
Plus, we had already seen that guy crumble one, if not two, relationships. I'm not sure if both of the girls were different girls that he... So.
They were different girls, yeah.
Okay.
That's his MO.
Yeah, so like, you know, maybe it's not good taking a risk on that guy. You know?
Yeah, he's a creepy college professor.
Yeah, so exactly. Yeah, there were so many things that you're just like...
Red flag.
Oh, the things the 80s did.
That's true.
That were okay and, quirky.
Sarah, you said you took some notes. Was there anything else we haven't covered that you just like, you're like, I need to talk, I love this movie about this thing?
No, I think we pretty much covered it. I think just tying it back to like differences and like, can we love people that are different from us? I think it's something that's absolutely necessary. Cause I think with Ronnie and with Loretta, like they handle things very differently, but fundamentally they have the same values. Right. So I think that as long as you have those common values, it doesn't matter if you like different things or if you, basically if you like different things, I don't think that should hinder you from falling in love with someone. But if they don't value the fundamental things that you do, I think that's where it comes, there can be conflict. Because I've always, you know, the people always say like, I've met my better half, and I think that's like really sweet, because you're talking about someone essentially like completing you and kind of making you whole. But at the same time, I think it's almost kind of dangerous, because you want to look at someone as your complement. Like, you don't want someone to, like, you should be a whole person when you get into a relationship with someone. It doesn't mean that you don't have baggage. It doesn't mean that you don't have stuff that you have to work through. But you at least know who you are as a person, because then it's harder for you to find someone that's going to, like, you're not going to let someone take advantage of what you're still trying to figure out. You're going to be more mindful of the type of person you need to make you happy. So I think that's important too. Like the better half thing, I think is a nice idea, but I think it's more realistic to be someone's compliment more than replacing something that they don't have.
Yeah, I love that. Boom, dropping that relationship advice, Willis.
Yeah, all of my many relationships.
Well, is it safe to assume then, I think we know the answer to this question, but one of the things we always ask is, would you renew your vows to this movie?
Would I renew my vows to this movie?
Is it just as good as you remember it when you first fell in love with it?
I think it's better. I think with each year that I see it, because I definitely watch it more than once a year. Like if it just happens to be on, I'm definitely watching it. But I think it renews my faith in love and how much like family kind of plays a role in that, and how beautiful that is, and how like that is, if I'm a hopeless romantic, which I think I kind of am, that's the kind of, I want to be able to sit around the table with my family and my significant other and my partner and just be content like that, you know? And to share and laugh and love and eat and laugh and cry and all that other stuff. Like, I think that's a beautiful thing. So yes. Yes, I would. I do.
Love it.
Gentlemen who are listening, if you like what you heard today, Sarah is single and
ready to mingle.
She's ready to find her compliment in life.
Yes, slip into the In Love With Movies DMs and you know, we'll vet you a little
bit. Oh, yeah, maybe, yeah, there you go. You know,
we'll connect you up if you live in the Chicago area. All right, Danielle, what would you give this out of 5 hearts?
I gave it a 5 hearts out of 5 hearts. I liked it a lot. I was only a little nervous at one point because I was like, what is happening? And also Nicolas Cage, Nick Uncaged.
Nick Uncaged.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was very sweet. And I just like that it was real. You see like real people in these relationships and you can almost believe them. So I liked it a lot. And I love Cher so much.
Yeah.
She's very important to me and she didn't disappoint.
All right.
How about you, Nick?
I was going to say, I'll let Sarah go last, so I'll go next. I actually have to admit, I had not loved this movie. And I had put down, I think a 2 or a 2.5 is what I was going to give it when I was coming into this conversation. But you all have talked me into and convinced me, especially Sarah, your love of this movie has inspired me. And aww. I think that I would bring that up to a 3, maybe even a 3.5, nice. With the understanding that it might be sort of dated. I think this movie does suffer a little bit from the fact that this I had ever seen it, and therefore... you know, I'm kind of just like disconnecting it or trying to compare it to modern movies, which it is not. So, but yeah. So three to 3.5.
Yeah. Love it for its time, it being a time capsule. It is a...
I mean, look at her hair when she gets it done. Definitely dated.
old time, like, yeah. In 1980s, or Brooklyn, I obviously give it 5 hearts because it is near and dear to my family and it is near and dear to... my heart's story.
Well, that's a pretty high average for it from us, so I think that's very good. I just want to say thank you very much, listeners, for going on this journey with us. Hopefully you enjoyed the first portion of our conversation, and hopefully you also have found time to enjoy this movie. I always forget to say these things at the beginning. Maybe I'll throw it in the beginning, like some kind of note on the bubble, but this is available right now. We watched it for free on Amazon Prime. If you have an Amazon Prime subscription, you could watch this movie before you listen to our conversation, or hopefully the conversation has inspired you to go watch it. So thank you very much again, Sarah. We really appreciate you taking out the time to talk to us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I love you, Danny.
I love you, Nick.
And we love you, Sarah.
I love you too. I said me and my multiple personalities. I love you too.
And all three of us love you, listeners. Thank you so much for going on this journey with us. Don't forget to follow us on social media and all those things. Check us out. Let us know what you thought of this movie if you watched us. Let us know what you thought of our discussion and share your voice in regards to the fact of loving the differences in others. And so we really appreciate it. Help you take care of yourselves out there. Never forget to take care of yourself and those that you love in every way that you need to. So we love you too, listeners. Take care, movie lovers, and we will see you all next month. Take care. Bye-bye.
Black Lives Matter.
Follow us on Twitter @iwithmovies, Facebook at facebook.com/withmoviesinlove and Instagram at inlove_withmovies.
You can email us questions or love topics that you want us to talk about at withmoviesinlove@gmail.com. That's withmoviesinlove@gmail.com. We really do want to hear from you. Any original music on this podcast is written by Danny Smith.
And the podcast is produced and edited by my husband, Nick Baldwin. We did!